Thank you so much for that, Amanda. Hi, everyone. I'm Barbara. You can call me Barb. So I'm going to name for the group right now. I'm feeling very nervous. This is actually my first share, and little did I know it was going to be this long. So I've had a few days notice, but I'm feeling it in my stomach. I'm feeling it in my legs. But I asked a couple of folks to be here, and just knowing that Amanda's here doing it with me has given me the strength. So I'm just going to keep a reminder that this is a group that wants to celebrate our recovery and experience our truest selves. So that's what I'm going in here with. Thank you all for the support. I see the waves. So for this opening share, I'm going to talk about my experience, strength, and hope. And I want to frame this share by introducing you to my three inner children. But before I do that, I do want to give kind of a general like background, some context. So I grew up with a mother with borderline personality disorder, and she was also an alcoholic. My dad was the codependent who was constantly disappointed and demanding all at the same time. My older brother never really seemed to have been present as an older brother for me. He was too caught up in trying to survive. He definitely got the brunt of our parents' insanity, and he's actually currently homeless. And seems to have remained sober from meth in the last 2 years, but a lot of the work that I'm doing is focused on my relationship with my brother, and both of my parents have passed in the last few years. So about my inner children, I discovered my inner children actually during a workshop on reparenting just before the pandemic hit. It was within the first 3 months that I joined ACA. So I'm just so grateful for that. Higher power really just brought me in and made sure I sat and stayed in that chair that day. We had used that day the visualization in the yellow book. I think it's on page like 171. So you all should check that out. And I've leveraged this visualization throughout my time in ACA. I'm going on a year and 10 months right now. And I continue to revisit that visualization as a way to keep my inner children safe and keep in touch with them. So my youngest, I actually just met a month ago. She's not even 5 yet and has been hiding since I started ACA. She's timid, but also terrified. When I used to look for her, I always sensed that she was hiding in the bedroom. And about a month ago, she emerged from hiding because I was actually planning another share, a share that I was unable to follow through on. For my home group. And I decided to plan out the experience part last. That was just kind of the most frightening for me. And as I started thinking about my experience, I started going farther and farther back. And this overwhelming anxiety washed over me. And I'd stumbled into early childhood, an area I hadn't been able to connect with yet. And she doesn't have much to say, but she shows me through feeling and visual memory. She's frozen in place next to the foot of her bed. Our bedroom has two doors on either side of the hotspots in my house. So my parents' bedroom on the left and the hallway to my brother's room on the right. And the wall that I had facing inward towards the house was adjacent to the den. And this is exactly where all of the commotion, all of the fighting was constantly happening. So I could hear everything from my room. My little one stands there next to the bed, staring at the door, staring at her feet, at the rug. I remember the cool pastel on the bed sheets. And I could hear dishes being broken, a body falling messily to the floor, my mom constantly screaming at the top of her lungs. And no one ever came in to check in on me. No one ever told this little girl that it's safe now. And she would wait for what feels like hours, just waiting for a safe time to sneak outside and like use the restroom. And sometimes someone would come through the room, like a hallway. I had those two doors, but it was really just to attempt to escape the person they were arguing with. Or my mom would come in not to check in on me, but to comfort herself. And she'd barge in, pick me up like a rag doll, and just sob her drunken slobber all over my face. And it was nearly impossible for me to hug my mom her entire life. My middle schooler has hidden her fear behind frustration. she's trying to puff her feathers and seem, you know, larger and more intimidating than she ever could be. And she's responsible for a huge turning point in my life. She had just turned 13 over the summer. And my mom was furious because you could not tell her no. And she wanted to go into my then 17-year-old brother's room just to grab his laundry. But this was an issue of boundaries, and this was an issue of just my brother wanting his space. And she was shoving at the door 1 minute. And before I knew it, there was this flurry of her trying to grab, you know, his things and him trying to grab them back. And in the blur of it, I'm watching from the side of my doorway, half hidden. And she grabs at his testicles from over his sweatpants and she's pulling. And my brother is screaming, like in shock and in pain. And I felt like I was on fire. I don't know where my dad is. And my dad was often absent at these times or hiding himself away in his room. And so I don't know what it was, but I picked up the phone that day and I marched into the hallway and I announced really loudly, I'm calling the police. And I dialed 911 and I told the operator that my mom was physically attacking my teenage brother. And I don't really remember too much after that. Like, I know the police were present. I know that they talked to us. And I know that when my mom came back to pick up some things, escorted out, like, she would not look at me. And I was sent to stay with my cousins after that. I don't remember exactly how long. It could have been a week. I feel like it could have been a month, and no one explained anything to me because I revisited this a few months ago. And I just remember my father dropping me off like it was any other weekend. And so I know I didn't mind staying there. It was definitely my safe space, my second home. But I definitely wonder, knowing now that while I was gone, that my dad actually met my mom up at the hotel she was staying at and begged her to come back home after all of that. And that she refused, as she liked to shove in my face that my father begged her to come home and that she refused, you know, playing victim. My inner teen is addicted to excitement. She is attempting to straddle opposite identities. I was a straight A student who, you know, did all the cooking, did all the cleaning, did all the grocery shopping for my brother and my dad. But that same person was also just trying to be one of the boys. And all the boys drank and smoked pot and were failing out of high school. So somehow I spent time with that group. I tried my hardest at everything and was like a constant jitter of anxiety, pushing me to do more. And it just never felt like enough. I had stopped eating sometime around my senior year in high school to the point where I can remember my tailbone like being bruised from just sitting in the classroom chair. My dad was an aerospace engineer who was laid off about 10 years prior to my teenage years. And he just relentlessly demanded perfection. And a compliment he made me for anything I did was always undone with like a, but next time, or except for this one thing, like it's great except for this one thing. My mom at the time was living with a new boyfriend, living a new life. Her boyfriend basically strong-armed her into rehab about twice, but it never lasted for more than 2 months. I remember always being hopeful that things would change, but scared at the same time, like looking for signs. And despite all of her continued drinking and continued violence, like I was still somehow like required to stay with her. But I also found myself wanting to, despite coming home in tears, despite having to get picked up early because she was acting out. Because we had discovered crafting together and cooking together. And I was so scared to find out like all the things we were starting to have in common. So it was a really confusing time for me. My brother during this time was homeless off and on. And my parents didn't know what to do with him. And when he was home, it was like the doors were locked, previous belongings are tucked away, keys are hidden. I come home after school and the house is filled with like what looked like 40-year-old men. And there's a strange smoky smell lingering in the house. My brother was selling drugs out of our house. And when he was homeless, for nearly a year at one point, I had to stop going home after school because I couldn't stand to sneak around the house with the lights off, pretending not to be home. And I remember having to hide in the corner of a room anytime I would hear him rapping at the windows, asking to use the bathroom, asking to take a shower, asking for food, and usually wrangling his way in back in the house. So that's, I want to be respectful of time. Those are my inner children. That is the weight that they're carrying. And I do want to spend some time on strength and hope. So ACA reminds me that strength doesn't mean not being afraid. It means being vulnerable. And so I'm practicing this vulnerability by sharing even when things aren't totally flushed out in groups. As much of an introvert as I am, I'm noticing that like external processing is really helpful for me to focus on an emotion rather than intellectualize it. This program has really given me confidence to walk away from people who are pulling me into their own dysfunction or refusing to respect an equal partnership. So within my first year of ACA, I've actually walked away from about four people, an ex, my best friend of 20 years who had become verbally abusive, and another friend who refused to respect boundaries, and another friend who was just an emotional vampire. And I'm able to do this because of reparenting. And for me, reparenting can be as simple as pausing for a cup of tea. You know, if I'm feeling down or just trying to question how I'm feeling, it's encouraging and reassuring myself when I've made a mistake or if I feel nervous, kind of like I did at the beginning of my share. I'm really learning to turn it over rather than just being brave, you know, working on forgiving myself. But allowing myself to feel, I think, is the biggest piece. I can really drop the need to be productive now and kind of just clear my calendar, try and slow down. So I'm definitely still learning to trust that I have immutable value. That's a big one for me. I'm still battling the tendency to compare myself with others, even within program, even within recovery, feeling like, am I falling behind? Am I not, you know, where I'm supposed to be? But I'm able to catch myself in these moments. And even once in a while, when I have a raging disorganized blow up, like I'm able to catch myself within minutes now, instead of it being a day or two delay. And so I'm happy to say I'm really proud of my improvements. And I know that as I keep working this program, it's going to show up in all the right ways. And I'm going to be able to just be my truest self. I don't have to think about it as my best self, but my truest self. So thank you. And I'd like to read a quick poem. I am not a musical person. I am a literary person. I am a person of words. And so I want to share with you all, I thought this would be really fun. When I thought of like, what can I share with the group? What rings true to me? We always talk about peeling the onion. And so I want to share with you a favorite poem of mine called Ode to the Onion by Pablo Neruda. So if you do me the honor. Onion, luminous flask. Your beauty formed petal by petal. Crystal scales expanded you. And in the secrecy of the dark earth, your belly grew round with dew. Under the earth, the miracle happened, and with your clumsy green stem appeared. And your leaves were born like swords in the garden. The earth heaped up her power, showing your naked transparency. And as the remote sea of, in lifting the breast of Aphrodite, duplicating the magnolia, so did the earth make you, onion, clear as a planet, and destined to shine. Constant constellation, round rows of water upon the table of the poor. You make us cry without hurting us. I have praised everything that exists, but to me, onion, you are more beautiful than a bird of dazzling feathers, heavenly globe, plastic. goblet, unmoving dance of the snowy anemone, and the fragrance of the earth lives in your crystalline nature. Thank you. Thanks for listening, y'all. I'll hand it back to Amanda.
I love that poem. And so next we're going to share on our time together, working on our own strength, hope, and recovery. I love that strength was about vulnerability too. I haven't seen it that way yet, and it makes sense at this very moment as we share. So, I mean, when I first saw Barbara, we were in a meeting in Pasadena on a Friday night, and I like looked across the room and was so glad to see someone with like cats all over her shirt, something like that. And she just looked like the coolest person ever. But as she shared too, I could tell we had some things in common. So on the way out, we would talk sometimes and liked really connecting. We moved from that meeting to another meeting together, which was awesome. It felt like I didn't have to leave everything behind and abandon this meeting when it just stopped working in my schedule, and just wasn't feeling safe anymore. So then we were in this meeting in Pasadena with, it was like yellowish and warmish, tannish everywhere. And there was this big comfy couch and they would drink tea. And to me, that sounded like actually heaven. I hope that's my heaven. And we would put ourselves into service positions and help whenever we could. And then I started to learn that we both worked with students, and we would connect sometimes over that stress and how funny it was that we worked with kids all the time and we were recovering our kids. And then I imagine us starting to work together was in the pandemic, and there was three of us, and I think Barbara set it up, but there was a fierce fellow travelers Zoom line, and the three of us would get on and basically just to connect. But we were going through step work and trying to support each other in step work while we were at home and like shut down. So once a week we'd meet and talk about our step work, and we realized that we were all kind of at really different places. So me and our third tried to keep going, and Barbara went in her own like step meeting and kept going. But that combination kept us in touch, and the three of us would meet and still do. The three of us met to celebrate finishing our 12 steps recently. And we got to like have a potluck and share a meal, which was amazing. And to me, that was like what I would have done to celebrate finishing my 12 steps, was immediately think of sharing food with Barbara and our third fierce fellow traveler. And what happened was, in when we would talk just kind of in our own fellowship calls, we reach out to each other when we're feeling like we need to talk to someone. It came up that in her step work, we would talk about it every week, like, oh, how's your step work going? And she had her own step meeting, and I had never done that. I'd only worked with fellow travelers. I hadn't been to a yellow workbook meeting. And we were talking about our fifth step and the inventories, and I was sharing with her how intense it was working with our other fellow traveler. And she was like, oh yeah, I felt like it was hard to do that in a group. And I said, well, I'll do it again with you if you want. I don't mind. And I knew that my own denial was keeping a pretty decent amount locked up from my first share of my fourth step worksheets and inventories. So, I mean, it feels like we're halfway. I think we're 3/4 of the way of doing that step review, and we've been meeting like every 2 weeks for the past like 3 months or something. So that's how long it takes. But I'm so thankful to have done another deep dive with someone who I've been at warm yellow team meetings with, and I've worked through service positions. That meeting turned into our Zoom meeting, and Barbara and I had to like click and work together really fast to make an online presence because we had just jumped into service positions. So overnight we turned our home meeting into Zoom, and we worked really hard together to make that happen. So some of our teacher organization feathers would show when we would do that together. But I think one of the biggest things that I wanted to share happened recently, where I just started becoming a sponsor. I finished my 12 steps and Higher Power brought me like two sponsees. And one of my sponsees was having a hard time with some fellow travelers she'd met and gotten very quickly attached to. And with Zoom, this meant like they could be on with each other all day, kind of attached. And something unsafe happened, and she's really about the red book and the rules, which I think is great and keeps her safe, and the other person was not. And she was really feeling that, losing a friend, a family member. And it was a fellow traveler that she'd known for a few months and been working really closely with. And I shared with her, you know, I have this fellow traveler and we've been together, we've known each other for a few years, we've worked really deep work, and I don't know if I would call her my friend. And my sponsee said, really? What are you talking about? And I was like, well, I think it's different. I'm not quite sure friends would do this work. I mean, it's like we're mucking around in the muck together when we're doing this work. I don't know if it's like friendly. Telling my sponsee's like, no, you're totally friends because you're close and you're sharing. And I said, I don't know. I think in recovery work, it's different. And I said, but I made a promise. I will ask. I said, I'm going to see Barbara. I will ask her if we are friends. And I was nervous. She would say no, but I knew it would be okay if she said no, because we're fellow travelers and that's okay. And then we like talked about it. We had like a really intellectual conversation about what would make us friends. And it was funny. We have conversations sometimes about like, I think that was a boundary, and we'll stop and laugh because it just seems so basic. Or like, oh, I think you needed to sleep. I think you're not sleeping. but that's where we're there for each other for the basics. And we don't see them and we call each other and the other one sees it and they're like comfortable enough to say, oh, here's this basic. I think denial is not allowing you to see. And we're like, oh my God, thank you for saying that. But we decided because we've gone out and done things for fun and just talked about things like music and Barbara said, I would invite you to a barbecue. We said, okay, I think that makes us friends too. But we did make our third fierce fellow traveler. I asked her as well, because I told my sponsee I would ask. They're the two I work with very closely. I went with that fellow traveler through all the 12 steps. And she said no, because we just do step work, you know, and it's different. And it was really interesting to like really in depth describe that to my sponsee. So I'm honored to say that Barbara said yes, we are friends, and to have a little bit of both in someone that, like I told Barbara, it's not share all these terrible who says it's okay and comes back to see you again. Because I haven't had that yet. I've known Barbara for probably almost 3 years, and I still worry that I'll be too much. I was told that a lot. You're too much, you're too sensitive, like I can't do this. So I'm always really worried that that's gonna happen. But my loving parent says it's okay if Barbara, it's too much for Barbara. It's okay if, you know, she can't. You know, I'm here for you, but that still hurts. Even saying that to myself still hurts. Cause I'm like scared it's not true. My inner child is scared it's not true, because even having this openness, and I've shared and have a lot of support around this, but with my spouse is hard. So in that kind of context, if that helps, it's just really hard. So I would say showing up and doing this with her, knowing that we can also talk about our cats, and having her over to my house and having her unconditionally love my like totally mangy super old cat that everyone is like, oh, she's like, oh, makes us friends. And then going through our step work and showing up and making time, even though we both have very little time, and like making time to eat together while we do our step work. and get tea together and go on walks together. I would even say I felt kind of bad because we were with our third fellow traveler, and she had the thought to ask Barbara a personal question about her life that I hadn't asked. And I was like, oh my gosh, I hadn't, you know, asked this personal thing, which might've been more of a friend thing to ask and check in with. And I apologized. I was like, I'm sorry. I should have, you know, been thinking about you more. And it's nice to know that in the space that we're in, I can think about me, and then we can connect and practice being friends. And I say practice because like we're like practicing the unconditional love and practicing the vulnerability and practicing calling each other, and even just practicing calling each other, even if it's for like 5 minutes, because we picked up the phone and pressed send, and and swapping cookies at Christmas. That sounds like a friend thing, right? Barbara's a fierce baker, and I'm a fierce bakery eater. No, just kidding. I also bake, not like she does. she's one of the few fellow travelers that's been okay and wonderful with my daughter. I know that's really hard for fellow travelers. It's very triggering at times to be around a kid, and she's 3, so she's like total toddler. But my daughter has such warm fuzzies with Barbara's name that it's like everywhere. Barbara's name is on Sesame Street. So I'm a dinosaur, and Barbara and I will share about Sesame Street, and that's how we get through our week. we were just joking that our lives would be easier in the morning when we look in the mirror if there were dancing Muppets behind us, because mirror work is really hard for us, and Muppets would make that a lot easier. So those are the weekly conversations we have to keep ourselves going, especially in recovery, but just in like our daily lives. But we've shared things like, we have agreed to be really honest with each other. And even in moments of being friends, we're fellow travelers, and we're that first. And I think that's what I tried to share with my sponsee. Like, we're fellow travelers first in a way where we understand and hold space and are unconditionally loving when things come up. And in your 4th step, 5th step, everything comes up. So having someone be unconditionally there is kind of mind-boggling and surreal. But I definitely would say that I don't think I would believe in things like support and love. And I trying again with my spouse and things like that without support from a friend and fellow traveler like Barbara would feel very impossible. And things like that that keep my life moving forward the way I want it to be. So I'll stop it there and let Barbara talk about our time together too.
Thank you for that, Amanda. Just to let you all know, like, we didn't share with each other what we were going to share today. So it's just like all these lovely little surprises. so I feel very seen. I really appreciate you, Amanda. So let's see, where can I start? And thank you, Amanda, for giving some context. On my end, so I was in step group for about 1.5 years, and not long after finishing up step 4, like, I was still feeling really lost and really stuck, and a lot of like really disorganized emotions were coming up for me, and I was feeling in a complete funk. And so Amanda and I were already, you know, having our like weekly talks and things of that, or I think the weekly talks had just ended around that time. And I'm having a phone call with her. I remember specifically, I was like doing dishes and talking to her on the phone, and I'm telling her about how I'm feeling these things. And I thought I would feel so much better after step 4, and I'm feeling disappointed, and I'm feeling like maybe I didn't do something right. And Amanda said, this was one of those moments where it's like the bliss thing is the answer. It was, well, did you get to share everything you wrote down? It's like, well, no, we were in a group. We did it over Zoom. Like we didn't have time to do that. She's like, well, sometimes, if I can mimic Amanda's voice, well, sometimes, she puts her teacher voice on, that, yeah, if you don't get to share everything, like it's still in there, it's still stuck. And I was like, that makes so much sense. So she asked, you know, do you have anyone in mind that you think you could share with? And so I haven't told her this. In the back of my head, I'm like, I really want to ask you, but I don't know how to ask you. Because I also think you're really busy. And so I'm like, well, I've been thinking, you know, there's someone in my step study that, you know, I think I'm kind of comfortable with. And I know I need to share with like someone of the same like gender to make it a safe space. And I have a ton of trouble connecting with women. This is a growing area for me. My mom was the abuser. So in my share, when I mentioned that I was just trying to be one of the boys, like I was seriously just trying to be one of the boys, y'all. Like I could not find safety with women. And with Amanda, I think there was definitely part of our connection. We didn't quite know we were cat ladies, I think, at this point. But, you know, yes, we were both educators, but I think there was a lot in terms of like our moms were the alcoholic and just kind of our, I think our temperament, we're just very kind of easygoing people, very curious people. There was a lot that we were able to just easily talk about. And I think Amanda, you being a reflective listener just naturally was really helpful to like connect. I really feel heard by you. And so she just straight out offers, well, I could listen if you want to do the step 4 and 5 together, like we can totally do that. I was like, really? So, you know, we made arrangements, and I think we were trying to go real gentle, like every other week. And because it was during the pandemic, like we had to do it, you know, in outside spaces at the time. And I think we met at the park the first time. And we're just able to really like nothing pre-planned, nothing, like we just got to kind of take it step by step and go as slow as we needed to. And I think one of the great things about doing this work together, is doing it one-on-one. I loved my step study group. I really want to revisit those folks and like bring that together. And I think also having the opportunity to revisit. So I actually revisited my step 5 concurrently as I was finishing up the 12 steps. So I wasn't even like through it all and I was already going back in. But it really helped me because I have a tendency to rationalize more than feel. And so working one-on-one with a fellow traveler really helped me just slow down. And I mentioned the reflective listening piece. I think what was helpful is that we utilized the guide at the back of the step book and we're just like, hey, we're paying attention to each other. Like let's make connections. So we're like after shares, we're helping each other notice trends. We're helping each other hear with more clarity, like what we're actually saying. And also inquiring, like asking to dig a little deeper, reminding me like, well, how did that make you feel though? is always really, really grounding. And I think the pandemic actually helped us be creative and place us out in nature, right? Because we just need to be outdoors. And it kind of gave us natural like gentleness breaks built in. It's like we poked around new spaces. We were trying to go to different like parks. We hiked up like these hills this one time and it was just beautiful. We were able to just take pauses like in between things very like naturally, definitely very higher power driven, and just exploring. Like it definitely became an opportunity, not just like, I got to share this intense stuff today, or I got to like really sit in this today, but it never felt like work. It didn't feel like this huge effort because we were able to make it just about like spending time and just about sharing ourselves with each other. And so I think going back to some of what was mentioned already is that like our friendship really just naturally developed. I think one thing for me, I think it was always a balance between program work and then, you know, naturally discovering through spending this time together, our shared values, our shared interests, you know, putting on records, realizing that we both have some records and some of the older music we're into. I think like shared curiosity, and again, that love for cats is helpful. Our joy in Sesame Street. So I know Amanda sees me because Amanda, every time she sees Grover, she sees me. I have to tap into Super Grover when I like really need a boost. So I know I'm growing in my recovery alongside Amanda, because with her, I'm able to really practice vulnerability. And this has been hard for me because I am an isolator. And it's, I know for myself, groups can be really hard. Group dynamics can be really challenging. I mentioned in my share, I have a tendency to compare myself with other people. And I'm always looking for proof that I don't belong. I'm always looking for proof that I'm being shut down or talked over. I'm always looking for proof that people don't agree with me. And so working with Amanda has been really helpful because like I'm able to just sit and build trust with one person, like focus on one person, one relationship. And through that build strength in order to start doing that elsewhere, right? Starting to look for proof that when I share something about myself, it's listened to. When I share something vulnerable about myself, that like the person doesn't give me an awkward look and walk away, that someone doesn't take my personal beliefs and feelings and throw them out for other people to hear. And most importantly, that someone says, that happened to me too. Yeah. So I think it's been really helpful for us to just be able to sit with each other and help us understand ourselves better has been the goal. And as much as I mentioned that I'm growing in my recovery with a close fellow traveler, I also want to name, one area of growth for me that I've been able to do is I do have other fellow travelers I can lean on. I'm getting better at making other outreach calls. I make a point that as close as I have been able to get with Amanda, that I also want to respect her space and her boundaries and not over rely on her. And so I think also now that we are friends and that we oftentimes will connect on things that are not like program issues, is respecting her time, respecting her space, and knowing through our experience that I have the ability and I have the safety of calling other people when I'm in crisis. But Amanda's consistency has really supported me in being able to pick up the phone and text or call and ask for support when I'm like in the midst of it, when I'm at my worst, when I feel like I don't even know what I'm feeling, because that's usually when I hide. But being able to slowly go through, you know, step 4 or 5 with somebody else, being able to feel really seen and not having that person walk away from you because they've seen the things you've been hiding all your life, has really given me strength to reach out to other people. So, yeah, I think that's all I have, y'all. So thank you for being here with us and listening. And thank you for being here for my first share.